Check out that braise. It's so intense. So a little goes a long way.
Okay, a little goes a long way. That may describe the food, but probably not his hustle.
Moving to Hollywood for 4 years, grinding, 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 shooting, editing, pitching, shooting, editing, pitching.
You know this celebrity chef from his national shows, but he's all up on our local matters as well.
Sheets opening by the Wawa. Yeah. This is big, right? Is this gonna be, are there gonna be some, you know, car explosions?
Maybe not car explosions, but similar explosive energy from author, celebrity chef, and host Jeff Morrow. Now, on the Pulse.
You're seeing history in the making here, folks.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. Bringing in cool people. They've got great stories. They're doing fun things. And today's guest, we were joking before we introduced you, like, master. We need like a track.
Yeah.
Master chef, celebrity chef, yeah. Emmy nominated, multiple shows, on tour. Jeff Morrow's in the building. Close?
That's good. I'll take that. It's a nice talk up, Bill. Thank you.
We work it up.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're a little low budget. I wish I had somebody with the, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson was here before.
Oh, he's got a very nice voice.
That voice.
You should have just had him say words so you can kind of save those words and cut together any sentence you want. I'm sure there's some legal ramifications of that. You might get the... We get business
and
affairs
he's really
involved
smart,
in that, but
and I don't,
he's smart.
Yeah, I don't want to have
just
that
say these
fight.
Thousand words so he can.
And we work with it.
Exactly.
Like, he introduced the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm using that as the intro.
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, oh, where am I?
He's like, yes, he's got to that, right? That. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Is that pretty good?
Yeah.
Well, they're seeing the cosmos. I don't know. I got to work on it. I haven't heard his voice in a while.
Right. So, doing a lot of things,
yes.
A bunch of hit shows. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that phenomenon.
Yeah.
But let's get to today. How did you even get into all of this?
Like, okay, well, I was a, you know, growing up, I was obsessed with food.
Okay.
And I was obsessed with show business and entertaining. So, two things that kind of converged early on in my life by having to make money, and I got my first jobs working in food, and I realized that's a stage unto itself, right? It's performance art. It's tangible. It's physical, and it makes people smile when it's good, right?
Yeah.
And then from third grade on, I just knew I loved being on a stage, class clown, making my family laugh, developing these characters, singing, musical theater, stand up, improv. Like, I was in Second City, Chicago classes from like third grade all the way through high school. So okay. I was always honing this like improvisational, you know, comic technique and kind of supporting all my other habits by cooking.
So that's like then, and we were, again, we were talking all the things that we should save and bring on the show. Which, was it even a reality at that point? You loved food, mm-hmm. you loved comedy, you loved performing, but was celebrity chef shows, mm-hmm. like all of this, even a realistic goal at that point?
I mean, I started, you know, realizing the idea was a good path for me, probably in late high school and then in a college when I always was, again, immersed in food and performing. But definitely after I graduated college and I opened a deli with my cousin, which you do with a nice liberal arts communication radio television degree.
Yeah.
You open up a deli, in debt. Like, because that's where all the money's at.
Absolutely.
Is being an hourly deli worker. But so I helped build it from the ground up, and I got cast in a show then, too, in Chicago. So I was doing both things, and I was, like, getting paid, you know, doing both things at a fairly high level for the first time. And I was like, what's the pinnacle of this?
Okay.
So I did. Probably when I was 20, 21, even 19, I was like, Food Network was on in my house all the time. You know, I watch Alton Brown. You'd watch Guy. You'd watch Emeril. You see Emeril live. You know, just the gimmicky BAM stuff and a crowd going wild. I'm like, this is rock and roll. This is performance. This is cooking and performance. I'd love to do this at that level as well. So the only path at that time, there was no YouTube, there was no Instagram, there was no social media, was a show called Food Network Star.
Yeah.
And that was the reality competition that you win in the end, not a cash prize, but your own show. And so I kept trying out for that. While trying my own things, producing my own cooking show pilots, moving to LA, moving to Hollywood for 4 years, grinding, 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 shooting, editing, pitching, shooting, editing, pitching. And finally, on my fourth try, I was cast on season 7 of Food Network Star. And then, you know, that was 2011.
Does that change everything?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it wasn't overnight. People are like, how was that overnight change? I guess it's as close as you can get to kind of an overnight sensation, because it was a 13-week path, 13 episodes. I went through every episode. Nobody knew if I was winning or losing. My immediate family did. So once you get to the end of that, right, you know you're close. The public knows you're close, but they really don't put all their stock into you. You know, they didn't put all their money on you because I could lose. So the moment I won and I was on a plane the next morning going to Good Morning America and going to Today's Show and on a book tour and all this stuff, six city stop, like that moment my life changed.
It changes like, just over, like that.
Like that was the overnight moment after winning that show. But I mean, it was a very long, arduous process.
It's interesting kind of hearing that behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because it's very similar to, like, we've talked to people who did American Idol.
Yeah.
You know, or we've talked to people who have done some of those like Survivor-esque kind of shows.
Yeah.
And as you're going through it, you're becoming a huge star. Like you're becoming very well known. But I'd imagine, at least for them, it took a minute for all of these people know me and I'm actually successful. I'm not getting paid for all of these people knowing me. You know, so when does it become, like when you get your own show is when it becomes a career?
Correct.
Okay.
Like it wasn't, I didn't get paid for being on the reality show. Nobody does, especially in the heyday of reality, which was like the mid to, you know, 2008 to 2012. It's when they treated you like prison cattle. You know what I mean? Like I have stories that would blow your mind of what I experienced in my 2 months on the set of that show. It was horrible so many times, but it was also the greatest opportunity, right? And it's a mind game.
Yeah.
But you're not getting paid. You're leaving your wife and family at home without two incomes. So you make it. And if you're not the winner, it's not like, again, they give you a show. And that show is the lowest they can possibly pay you for anybody
no
to
leverage.
Host a show.
You won a show. Not like you're talking to my agent and negotiate.
No, I mean, it was like probably, I don't even care talking about it. I'll give you the scoop. But it was probably like, I don't know, like 1,800 or 2,000 an episode, and I made six episodes.
Okay.
And I signed with an agent.
So you were working.
Yeah, I was working.
Yeah.
Right? And those episodes took 2 days each in the beginning. And you peel off 10% for your new agent, you're like, oh my God. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute, the government's obviously gonna take 38% of this because whatever. And then you gotta, we gotta play the lawyer. And you're like, oh my God, I gotta work almost harder than I ever did because this is not a windfall immediately. Like you said, it takes time to ramp up. And then you get kind of a brand deal, you know, and you get a little taste of that early on. And then you hope for a pickup, right? Your show airs. They don't have to pick it up just because you won the stupid reality show.
Right.
Like, they could, so many people who won that never went on to have their own franchise or show. So I'm one of the blessed ones here, I guess, just having it and being so trained by that moment, both in food and performance and on camera, that I came out. I ran out of the gate. I was like, give me everything you got.
Yes.
And I'm going to prove myself by being early, by being easy to work with on set. And that was some of the greatest strategies I picked up during Food Network Star was fine. You know, I got 60 seconds to, this is a sandwich and you could present to camera and it's like, you're going through your mind. Like this, there's nothing, nobody gets 60, you know, unless you're on a live morning show or something. So that does help. But it was how to behave myself on set. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm misbehaved, but like how to treat everybody. It's like, I think it's 25% of why people hire you, maybe even more, if you're well-liked in the community of the crew that's handling all the business.
It's so interesting.
And I see people that don't value that. Yeah. It's crazy to me.
I had a mentor in this business, not about me, but I had a mentor in this business who once said that to me. And I was not doing much.
Yeah.
I was not doing especially well.
Yeah.
We could argue whether I am now. But that person said, people like you. Mm-hmm. And they like working with you.
Yeah.
And that will do well for you as long as you don't become that jerk who all of a sudden you get a show and people don't like you anymore.
It flips. Because you
got a show.
Yeah, it's a big giant head walking around. Next thing you know, anytime you snap your finger, someone brings you a roast chicken if you want it. Yeah. Right?
So I mean, I guess like, it keeps you humble that we're in a closet, like shooting.
This is great. Show. No, listen, man. It's I'm on basic cable.
I mean, it's a cool closet.
We're basic cable. You this know. Is not network. You know, so there are limits. But it did. I got used to having things. Like, and I don't take advantage of that because they will do. They want to make you happy. It's just like this. It's this gross power that's bestowed upon you. you know, in it, with great power comes great responsibility.
Right.
Right? Batman.
Right. I just think it makes you more of who you are.
It does, man.
Because I think that you seem like, and I've known you for, you know, 20 minutes, seem like the guy who was fun, was enjoying this, was excited about it, and what have you. And then as you become successful, you just have more resources to be that same person.
Yeah.
Like, or more research to be a jerk.
Hey, man.
You know, right?
Yeah, it can exacerbate anything, right? Or you can, I think my strategy was, there was thoughts with, when I went away, I talk about like I'm going to the joint. I went away.
I was like, this wasn't
when I went away, it's been a reality show. I did 2 month stint at, in Los Angeles in New York. When I went away, my son was a year and a half.
Okay.
Like, I barely knew the kid. I mean, I just know him for like, I didn't know him.
Barely knew him.
And for the first six months of his life, I didn't like him. He was a baby. It wasn't awesome. He sucked the soul out of my wife and I didn't like the kid. And then you finally get to like him and you're like, okay, this kid's pretty cool, but I'm still getting to know him. So you can't really articulate to a 1.5-year-old that daddy's going to like try to achieve his dreams on a reality show competition. Don't worry, I'm doing this for the family, right? And so his mind was messed up.
Dad. Yeah.
So I had that in my mind. It's like, I got, like, it's so cliche, like, I got to do it for the family. But, like, you know, they sacrificed a tremendous amount. And, you know, that doesn't get talked about a lot, like what you leave at home. And when I did come home, that I was like my first black car, you know, like a SUV black car, taking me home from O'Hare to my house that I just lived in a freaking basement for 11 months to save up for this house, my in-law's basement with a 1-year-old. Not easy, especially if you really don't like your or know your kid that well. So I remember pulling this little red brick house, our first home, and like my son ran out, my wife made cookies. It was like, and I knew then I was top two.
Yeah.
I didn't even care, like, I didn't care that I could have lost, I could have won. Like, that moment is like, I leveled up and I achieved something and I motored through that.
And it's worth it.
I was, dude, I got very, very homesick. Like, crippling homesick. It stinks. Because you can't talk. You can't call home. You don't have any distractions. You have no books. No music. No TV.
But it was all worth it. Now.
100%. But if I lost, I would probably have a different answer.
If you did all that. And I did all that.
I know.
I'm back in my in-law's basement.
I did 2 stints in my in-law's basement.
But look at you now.
Yeah, look at me
all right,
now.
So, multiple shows.
Yeah.
You're doing a tour.
Yes.
What inspired that?
We played Philly last week. It was a tremendous crowd here. We're doing city wineries all over the country. We're going to be in New York and Boston next month. So go to jeffmorrow.com for that to see tickets. And then we're adding on other theaters. You know what? Let's be honest. The Kitchen got canceled a couple months ago after 41 seasons, 548 episodes.
Okay.
12 years,
which is a solid run.
And we got canceled with really, really good ratings. So we're in a scary place right now, I think, in television overall. And I think we're all scrambling. Podcasts, right?
Yeah.
YouTube series. I mean, the options are endless using a telephone. Okay, so the game's changed. What do I do? What am I like skilled at? And what's my biggest differentiator was a crowd. Mm-hmm. Stand-up meets improv. I have a band at home that's been playing for 6 years that we tour around called the Jewel Bags. So I peeled off some of my guys from the band. My little sister who sings with the band, she's kind of runs the AV on the show.
Okay.
And there's stings of music throughout. It's storytelling. It's my story, a lot of what I just told you right now. So, spoiler alert. But I did this as a way to connect with an audience in the truest format left, almost. The most believable format, at least. Yeah. And that's live entertainment. And I love it. And it's weird. And it's nebulous and dynamic, and I'm like, I get up on stage and I feel, you know, that those nerves that I have not felt in a while doing TV or even doing like my band and stuff, or even doing live cooking demos for 1,000 people. Like, this is raw. It's, you know, it harkens back to my stand-up and improv days, and it's just, it's fun.
Yeah,
and
you're stretching yourself.
Yeah, and I, of course, like, I eat, like, you know, 8 sandwiches on stage, too.
Because you gotta.
Ask you as a local, are you born and raised?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
So, on the news this morning was, like, everything going on in the world, I'm shocked. I know this is probably, this is tape, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the Wawa sheets, although the sheets opening by the Wawa. Yeah. This is big, right? Is this going to be, are there going to be some, you know, car explosion? It's going to be like Youngstown in the 80s? Are things going to blow up? What's going on? This is bad.
All of that, yes.
It's bad.
All of that depends on, the more that they do this, it really depends on location. Because Wawa next to Sheetz, Sheetz has no shot in Philly.
Sheetz has no, no shots in Philly.
Nah.
Is Sheetz Philly, Philly? Sheetz is in Philly based.
No, so Sheetz is generally further out. Like it's kind of suburbs, Pittsburgh, and then making their way.
Yeah, the dodgy side of town, right? The bad neighborhoods. Yeah, okay, I know what you're saying. The inferior cities, like the
Bucks
mid-level
County gang signs.
Yeah, right.
Like
the places
BC.
With no culture, and just generally bad
from
moods.
Philly. People don't really know a hoagie. You don't know what's going on.
So yeah,
you want that.
So, but they do
it's
hoagies
an interesting
too.
Decision.
Yeah. All right, so they do hoagies too. Obviously, Wawa. I'm one of the few Chicagoans who grew up going to the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
So like Wildwood and Seattle City.
All right.
So I have a familiarity with this, with the culture of the shore in Wawa, because I loved it as a kid, going and getting like a turkey with white American cheese.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Knock I was like, we only had the yellow variety in Chicago. And now you can't even say or serve white American.
Listen, you got people.
Can't do it. Can't do it. So I'm sorry. Disclaimer.
You just asked
I don't
for
believe
American.
In color of cheese. I believe all cheese.
Just
it's just I just call it American cheese.
They start making it fancy.
Yes.
They sit there, can't say white Americans. Cooper Sharp? Can I go Cooper Sharp?
Man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's yeah. So what would you, I mean, so no chance. So if I sampled both hoagies, same order. I'm going to like Wawa's
I'm
better.
Going Wawa. Yeah.
Is that the
now,
consensus?
I was on the road for a while. Like, I was reporting for a while for a show that was based in New York, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And we covered this area. So I would be on the road a lot. So I experienced Sheetz more than most Philadelphians would.
Okay.
And there's you can find things positive with both. I think for sandwiches, I'm all Wawa.
You're all Wawa.
Yeah.
So what do you like at Sheetz? Was there some fry like a cheese kind of thing they do? No?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to do my research.
It's just different.
Yeah.
Like, Wawa, you just, if you're a Philadelphian, you're used to, I want this.
Yeah, Wawa.
Sweet
with
peppers
your
and go and
sweet
just.
Sweet peppers. Yeah. I remember I was shooting out in this region, like in the, I had a show called Kitchen Crash. That too was canceled. Thanks for bringing it up. I was shooting during the heart of COVID. Like, it was one of the first shows. And the only reason they produced the show was because it was all outside. It was like a block party. We go into people's, you know, the chefs would have to run into people's houses.
I've seen
gather.
These shows.
No, it's a good,
people.
It was a great show. It's
like,
just
I watch
released
all
during
the time.
A bad time. And I remember I was like, oh, I'd have to go quarantine at Avon on, there's a nice area on the shore.
Okay.
Avalon, right? Avalon? Yeah. Or no, Avon something something. I don't know. Maybe it is it. No, I don't know.
Like Avalon's down the shore. Avon might it's, be like a place.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
a specific location.
Anyway, I was there like, you got to quarantine for 2 weeks. So I was like, the hell? I'm not going to sit in a hotel for 2 weeks. I go, you want me to do this show and quarantine for 2 weeks just to make sure I was healthy enough to do this show.
Right.
So then the show would take 2 weeks. So I was going to be gone for 4 weeks. I was like, you're sending my family, my dogs. You're getting me a house on the shore.
Nice.
And my friends came, and the kids did the school from home thing.
Yeah.
And it was great, but I remember they left. They flew home, and I was, like, kind of lonely. I was, like, all alone.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, my God, I got 3 weeks. And I'm a big intermittent faster, not that you care. but, like, I made it to, like, 3 o'clock. I was starving, and I was Wawa.
Wawa.
And I couldn't wait. I had it mapped out. I got off the road. I pulled into the thing. It was she. I forget her name. I think I even took pictures and videos with her. She was an older lady. She was just perfect. And it was like the warmest experience I've had.
Who is this lady? She
I don't
worked
know,
at
man.
The Wawa?
I got to look in I have pictures, so I could probably geotag it. But it was off one of the main roads, and I got with the sweep, and it was like double meat.
Yep.
And then the add pepperoni.
So you're Wawa.
Which I did. Dude, and I remember in the car.
You're like, this is
great. Just an animal.
This
you know, you don't
amazing.
Even care. Shards of lettuce everywhere. Just lettuce on my tummy. And I'm like, you know, I felt happy.
Did you ever think that's a perfect commercial?
Yes.
If you would like to sponsor this show,
I'll take a sponsor. Sponsor my live tour, man. I'll bring
there
you
go.
I do love Wawa, though. Yes.
Did you ever think? You know, and now I'm one of those people who watches. There, I have a bunch of go-tos. Like, I probably could cancel premium channels because I either watch live sports things like this, The Pulse on Fox 29, or I'm on cooking stuff shows all the time, and I can't cook at all, but I am fascinated by all the different things. Did it, even in your wildest presentation, think that it could grow to this? You know, doing the cooking shows and the tour and just this level.
Yeah, I had no, I mean, it's funny. I guess there's a lot of doubt in my journey, right? There's just a, you know, you almost give up so many times. And I don't know if I caught a lucky break or if even if I did win the show, there was choices I could have made that kind of deterred that trajectory and pointed it down. You know, I just, I don't know. I wake up in the morning and it's so cliche, but like sometimes I literally wake up and I'm like, wait a minute, is this real? Like,
this is my life.
I swear, is this my life?
Yeah.
And it, like, it's crazy because you watch this in movies when they're like, wake up, you know, Nick Cage wakes up. He's like, this is not my wife. You know what I mean? In that holiday movie, which I really do love. I think it's my favorite. You know that one I'm talking about? I forget it. It's like a Dickensian Scrooge thing. Anyway, I don't know, man. Like, and so that morning, so when that feeling happens, I'm like off to the races. Because getting here, getting it, making it was like is insurmountable, very hard, but keeping it is impossible at times. And growing it and diversifying and trying to set yourself up for a comfortable future, you know, because there's nothing certain, you know. And I'm still in the game where in order to make a buck, I got to get on a plane and then and wait for a phone call. But so that's still, why I started this show. I'm like, I'm going to own, this is mine. Like nobody's produced, this is mine. I can make it as big as I want if I work it hard enough and hone it and get it in front of as many people as possible. Humble.
We got to go. Other people want to talk to you. Oh. So they're telling me we got to go ahead and wrap this thing up. There is, it's a, the humble quote that that we were talking about is, remember that there is somebody right now who's praying for the life you already have.
Amen.
You know, and at one point, you were that person.
Yeah.
You know, and now you have it. And it's kind of cool to embrace that. This is fun. Anytime you're in town, you need to come and
hang
out.
Please, I love it, man. You're good. You're a good interview.
The theme of The Pulse is the concept of using your voice for good.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask everybody, when you hear that phrase, use your voice for good, what does it mean to you?
Well, recently, a year ago, my father, Gus, passed away from pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
It was a very quick and violent 6-week bout, so we lost him, like, which seems like overnight. And I was so ignorant to what pancreatic cancer is. And so now I've made it a point, teamed up with PanCAN, which is a pancreatic cancer action network, started a team doing a walk in April, the Purple Stride Walk. And you know, because I've done so many charity things, you know, everybody asks you, I host galas, I give stuff away, I do dinners, and it's for wonderful charities like Ronald McDonald House, all that stuff. But I feel like with my power, my voice, now that it resonates so deeply with my family and I see, you know, it changes it. You lose a parent. It really does rewire your DNA and you're like, I'm going full into this because, you know, I don't know if nobody's not, and then I don't want anybody else to go through this. So that's it. It's a good one.
I like it. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Because that people watching will understand why I just got quiet too. I'll share a story with you about how that resonates with me. But thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in. Make sure you check him out on tour, on social media, books. I'm sure shows coming out, all the things.
MarlProvisions.com. Order Italian beef kits from Chicago. All my Jardiniere products, everything. Yeah,
all the things. You're easy to pull for. Root for.
Thank you, man.
Want
thank
to see
you.
Continued success.
I can't wait to come back here. Appreciate I love Philly, it. Man.
Jeff Morrow, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. Today with celebrity chef and best-selling author and star of the stage podcaster. He does a little bit of everything and does it very well, Jeff Morrow. I absolutely enjoyed hearing his story, his experiences, what inspired him, that journey that he started and remains on, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you would like to get updated every time another episode of The Pulse comes out, hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is on your screen, and then you'll get that notification once a week when we've got the cool new shows coming out. You also can download the Fox Local app, so all of our shows are right there on demand at your fingertips. You're going to have me making up numbers, but it's got to be 160-some-odd episodes. How many? 169 episodes so far and counting, and they are all there at your fingertips on the Fox Local app, so download that. And you can also hit me up on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. Thank you so much for listening, and I leave you as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.